you look at things like Confucius and some of those Eastern philosophers and stuff like that. There's so much that is passed down to their world to talk about. And then so much of the history we have is because we're fantastic enough that we...
What's all up? Right.
We always snapped you at the last minute because we're waiting at that dark screen to turn into
yes. Us. Well, welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. It is no longer a dark screen. It is our beautiful faces. And it is a hot day in Youngstown. It's going to be 93 degrees today. So I was enjoying the 72 and, you know, cloudy.
It was a good sleeping night. But
Yeah, that's true. So how's Joe's world? Good. How was your weekend?
Yeah, everything was great. I got so much work done and we're on the edge or end of that consolidation phase. So you start assembling your next mm-hmm. thing and it gets super exciting about what's coming next.
Yeah. I always know when Joe's in a planting phase, I start to see, more new faces and I'm meeting new people and there've been a couple new folks here in the studio and I'm like, oh, Joe's done with consolidation.
You know it.
Yeah. That's really cool. Well, I want to, do a quick one today on some law of attraction stuff. Cause sure. I think I had a epiphany moment.
Did you?
Okay. And so we're going to go in this direction and I want to hear Joe's thoughts on it.
Okay.
So I have found for myself this go around with buying and selling my house that I am very comfortable in the abstract, letting my faith run. So it's easy for me to be like, you know what? The right house is going to come at the right time. You know, God's going to provide, whatever language you want to put on that. And, you know, you get excited. For me, it's the treasure hunt side of things. I know I'm going to hit an X on the map and eventually get to dig and I'm going to find the treasure. And so I enjoy that spot. That's life-giving for me. But one of the things that I'm noticing is as the future comes into focus and certain options are eliminated and it's not as broad as it once was, you start to get down into the nitty gritty and the details begin to emerge. And as details start to emerge, obviously we know fear, uncertainty, and doubt come and visit us. The FUD comes to visit. But I found for myself this time, as the details start to come down, I have to drive even harder on my faith side of things to keep myself open. In the beginning, it's easy to be open because you don't have any other choice. But then as you start to narrow down your choice, you know, for instance, my wife fell in love with a house. Now I have the pressure to get that house.
Right.
And the pressure, you have the stress, you have the FUD, you have a bunch of these things kind of collide all at once. And as it all of a sudden it feels like, well, I'm no longer open. I'm now closed. That's what we want. And you make that declaration, you make that decision, whatever it is. And then you have to continue to convince yourself to remain open. And so this is what I found, right? So with the house, like we made this offer, right? And there's several things that have to line up with it. And no doubt they can. But the thing that I'm learning is I need to be comfortable in the space that the best outcome is going to come, even if it's not this house that we've narrowed down on.
Yes.
The best outcome is going to come even though we had an offer on our house that was rescinded because they went and found a better house for them. That the right stuff is going to come at the right time in the right way. And what ends up happening as you make decisions in your life and you start to narrow into more detailed, my faith narrows. And what I've been trying to do this go around is to keep myself broad in my faith approach. So yes, well, we have faith that we like this house and we want this and we made an offer and we're moving our faith in that direction. It's active. I'm still fighting for the peace that comes from, you know what, it's broad. Cause if that house doesn't work out, there's something better around the corner. Do you find that to be true for yourself that as you narrow down and you make some decisions, because sometimes you get the fear of missing out a little bit, like, oh, well, what if we've got this and there's a better one around the corner next week? Or what if the housing market takes a turn in July and we're able to get this house for $30,000 cheaper? Like your brain plays those games as you narrow down. But if you really leave yourself broad that, hey, I'm going to keep my faith and my options open, even though I've started to make a decision, a declaration, and have narrowed down, I know that even if that decision declaration doesn't work out, that the best is still to come.
For sure. So now this is a practice thing, and you're going to even, there's even a stage beyond this one, but the way that I'm going to throw this out to you is that through practice, you'll see like something happen to me either good or bad. Mm-hmm. And I just proceed like it was just nothing. Right.
Yeah.
I use my emotional energy. You got to think of like when you're in that faith stage, you're using your subconscious of the things you just know. And then when things get escalated back up to your conscious brain, that's where the fear is. That's where the details are, the data and whatever. When you have that baton handoff, it one felt really good because you're in your own mind. And the other one feels like there are things changing and whatever. Now, think of it in this way. So think of you before may have been acting more of a soldier than a general.
Okay.
Okay. Now the soldier will give all of they got through the emotional energy to get to the victory at the end of the hill, right? And they plant the flag and they're all celebrating. Yep. The general knows that that's not going to last battle that you're going to face. And you not only have to be cool for the battle that's in front of you, but after you don't want to over celebrate because over the next hill, there's another army, there's another problem and whatever. And now think of that moment where you just won a really battle that you should have lost and you planted your flag and you really ready to party, and someone's like, oh, guys, wait a minute, don't celebrate too much. There's more guys over there. Like, what would that moment feel like?
Yeah,
that's exactly
where
we're at right now.
No, that's 100% correct. And I think when we've talked about law of attraction and building things for your life and visualization, all the stuff that turning your faith on, I think the more times you do it, the more you're learning, all right, I think certain personalities even have certain pitfalls. Like my personality has yes, there are the human pitfalls, the fear, uncertainty, and doubt that come in and visit. But I know for me in this space, like my wife was very much struggled with the openness of everything. Like, I don't know what the next step, and the uncertainty kills her up front. Now that we have, I want that house. She's at peace. Like, that's what we're doing.
Right.
Like, I have a decision, you know, we're going to do that. And for me, now that we have a decision, I'm going, all right. And there's nothing I can do to make that happen. Like, there's no external manipulation that I can do. I can't throw any more money at it. I can't do, like, we've made our offer. I can't make somebody come buy my house. The only thing I can do is put my faith into practice. And this is what I text our realtor. And I said, well, that we're going to get our basement cleaned out and spotless. We're going to get everything packed in the garage, and we're going to prepare ourselves to move because somebody else is coming to buy the house. That's the only step I can do. I can't, maybe I can share some stuff on Facebook, but I really, there's nothing else on my end to sell the house other than, hey, I'm going to prepare myself as if the house is being sold and it'll be under contract by the end of July.
Think about it. I mean, look at the frame. You and Sam are completely opposites in this deal. You both invited something into your world.
Yep.
You're both experiencing it completely different. The end result will be exactly the same, but both of you will traverse it in completely different directions.
Yeah, because bottom line, we're moving to Buffalo.
That's it.
And is whether it's this house, another house, whether it's 3 weeks from
now,
10 weeks from now.
Both of you, if I were to interview both of you, you're going to say that it was too closed, and she's going to say that it was too open. Both having the same exact experience.
Yeah. That's wild. Do you tend to be more closed or more open?
I'm malleable. I slalom like crazy.
Is Deb more closed or open?
She is way more closed.
Yeah, I feel like her and Sam are wired similarly in that regard.
For sure. Yeah. But it's those unknowns. Like, I invite unknowns all the time because the payoff for unknowns is freaking amazing.
Yeah.
Right?
Huge when you hit gold, you're like, wow, absolutely. Okay, I'm so glad I did this. Yeah. And the times where you don't, you're like, well, that was fun looking for it.
That's right.
Go to the next thing.
And the expectations were that that it could have gone either way, and you're cool either way.
Yeah. So how do you manage that relationship with you and Deb? How do you guys do that? For Sam and I, we've had some moments where certainly fear, uncertainty, and doubt has come in, and I've had to be strong on that end. And now that she's in her peace mode and made her decision, and I'm going, how do I make this come to pass? Because I want my wife to be happy in that regard. And she's dealing with my freak out on the back end of the FUD, where hers is on the front end. Do you and Deb have some go-tos with that? Like, how do you kind
We've done it so long and we've practiced it so much. Mm-hmm. It's like these really subtle handoffs. Like, she knows it because she's done it so many times. So when she starts experiencing something, I just have to like say one word, and then she'll rewind it to be like, oh, and then she'll just hand it back off to me. And
she doesn't punch you when you say the one word.
No. And but she, in the moment, she doesn't even realize it's happening until I throw that little keyword out there, and she's like, oh, it's FUD time. I did this or whatever.
Right. No, that totally makes sense. So you're coming out of the consolidation phase. We talked about that. And much like with a new adventure of a new house and moving and all that stuff for me, you're charting some new waters for Joe. You're bringing some new people into the boat. You're relooking and reimagining the studio and a bunch of that stuff. I know you got some entertainment stuff you're looking at doing. How do you manage the fear, uncertainty, and doubt for you with multiple layers of this? It's not one big decision. It's 17 small ones.
Well, not even that. It's a figure eight where I'm in a perpetual war. There will never be a mountain that I don't go over, that there won't be something to conquer. Right.
Yeah.
Somebody just asked me yesterday, I said, so what's your end goal with all of this business stuff? Like what means like you can plant the flag and say right. You're done. And I said, there really isn't like this. I'm going to do this forever. This is my forever thing. So I have to like make sure that game theory where I survive every decision and I can always play another day and I never risk and no Hail Marys, really small mm-hmm. runs. And I just got to be okay with the level of risk has to be proportional to what I'm willing to lose anytime.
Yeah. Well, and I think for me, looking at how Joe functions and operates, I think you're 100% right. Like I want to show up every day and be able to play.
That's right.
Like easy is no fun. It's boring. Like I want the challenge. I want the, well, I've never done this before. There's actually a passage of scripture, Joe. I knew you were going to hit it. You love that button. So when I was called into ministry, Joshua chapter 1 was used and it talked about being strong and courageous and that God was going to do some tremendous stuff. But that was the fun part. And we're like, yeah, you know, I want to be used and all that. But then you get to Joshua chapter 3, and they're about, the Israelites are being told by God to go into the promised land. They're about to get the land that God promised Abraham hundreds of years earlier. And Joshua's given very specific instructions. He sends his crew out, and the Lord says to him, you know, you're going to do this, but listen, you've never gone this way before. This is something you've never done before. And then God gives him the instructions to do it. And some of the instructions are a little weird. You know, he sends the worshipers first, not the warriors, and you're going in to conquer land. So it was a little different. There had to be a miracle that took place to get them actually into the land. The Jordan River had to part so that they could go in. And there's a couple of those pieces, but as I've gotten into ministry, I feel like God's progressed my calling. And when I hear that Joshua 3 passage, you've never gone this way before, I'm like, yes, that is where I'm in that phase of my calling. It's fun to be the strong and courageous and God's going to use you. And that's amazing. And all, but you get then to Joshua chapter 3, where he's like, in order for me to use you, you're going to have to do a whole bunch of stuff you've never done before. And that's when you get visited by fear, uncertainty, and doubt. Because at that point, you know, you're staring across at something you're supposed to have. It's literally called the promised land. Like it was promised to you, but you still have to go in and occupy it. And I think for a lot of people, they look at the house or the job or the studio or whatever it is, and they go, yeah, but that's supposed to be mine. I want that. I believe for that. I've journaled about it. I business planned for it. I've done all this stuff. But ultimately, you can talk about it. You can dream about it. You can scribble on a pad of paper. But until you cross in and execute on it, it doesn't belong to you. You have to actually go in and occupy it. There were enemies they had to defeat to in and take the land. So as you overcome the fear, uncertainty, and doubt, which is really the first step for them into the Jordan River. They don't, how are we going to cross? He says, well, priests are going to go first. They're going to step in. The waters are going to part and we're going to walk across on dry ground. And they take some stones out to remind them of what God did from the middle of the river. And then they put them as an everlasting, you know, kind of reminder to their children and grandchildren that this is what God did. So, you know, you overcome the fear, uncertainty, and doubt to enter the promised land, but then you actually have to occupy it. And I think that's the part of future and miracles and any of that stuff that people really wrestle with when they look at their dream job or launching a company. Like, it's not just starting. It's not just stepping out into the Jordan. It's, I have to go conquer Jericho. I got to go conquer AI. Like, there are enemies on the other side of that are living in your land that you're going to have to go and conquer this one and conquer that one. Now, obviously we're talking about physical people and physical battles that took place, but you can parallel that. You know, when you start a business, you're going to have to conquer the financial side of things. You're going to have to conquer the vision casting, the marketing, all of that. So there are different battles that you'll have to fight in order to occupy the promise and then to expand that land. You have to continue to do that in a figure
perpetual.
Eight.
Yeah.
Perpetually.
Well,
exactly.
And that's the difference. Like, you don't want to homogenize the different skill sets in human beings, where the soldiers want to go conquer the battle and they want to you know, leak away and then go recuperate before the next battle. And you want the generals to be able to be in that perpetual net mode that there is never really a, you know, a victory. I see so many more businesses fail after they conquer the tough stuff when they get to the win than, you know, any other time.
Yeah. And you get lulled into it. And it's interesting, even in ministry, you see the same thing. You know, you see pastors go through these really tough seasons and then they'll quit. And, well, I was just burnt out. I was tired. I was all those things. I was like, yeah, but you just push past the hardest part.
That's exactly.
And,
right.
and then you cash it in. You know, I know for, Sam and I, it's always interesting when you're playing with your own money versus when, you know, for somebody to come in and work for Joe and be like, oh, I'm going to law of attraction some of these things. You're kind of playing with house money at that point. Joe has all the risk. Joe's bought the building. Joe's, you know, in that sense. So you work for him. So you're kind of playing with house money. And that's a great place to experiment and learn how to work faith and how to do that on various projects, et cetera. But I've found such a different level when I'm playing with my own dollars and cents. When you start investing in yourself and when you start you know, you buy a studio space and name it Youngstown Studio before there's, you know, a camera or a microphone, and like you're stepping out and there's almost tiers to it. You know, we talked about A, B, and C players last week. Yeah. I think there's probably A, B, and C type of faith.
For sure.
You know, you can play with somebody else's money, so to speak. And to some extent, you're supposed to do that with your kids. I'm sure you do that with Ryan. You give him space where, hey, I have a safety net over here. Or, you know what, I'm going to pull the net out of the way. And he needs to feel that when he hits the ground, you know, he's going to try this and he's got to learn to dust himself up, you know, off and do it again. Then you kind of have the B level where, you know, you have some invested into it. You have some time, some energy, some finance. But ultimately at the top of that pyramid is, hey, this is all me. Like, this is my money. This is my time. This is my vision. This, when you pour that in, you know, you feel more responsible. And what I find is the way a kid is with level C faith, like, you know, Charlotte, Graham, Ben right now, Abraham, nothing has a dollar and cent sign to it. Like, there's no limitations on what they can do because they're playing with house money.
Right.
Like, dad's going to take care of it. Mom's going to take care of it. It's not that big a deal. And it's interesting because the level of faith sometimes that they play with, I'm like, man, I wish I could do that. Because there's just a reckless abandon. Like, I know my dad's going to take care of it. And somewhere along the line, we forget that. And I know even as a pastor, some of the things that I end up seeing and doing, you end up, you know, you know what? I'm just going to hedge my bets on this one because
defensive posture,
total defensive posture because, well, I've seen this play out before and it didn't play out well. So, you know, I don't want to push all my chips to the middle of the table on this one. You know, and you end up, but you watch that. And the Bible actually tells us that we, unless we have faith like a child, we can't come to God the way that we need to. And it's such a beautiful picture because, you know, my kids are completely trusting and completely like they're safe to be free and to try things and they're not afraid to. And somewhere along the line, we either have taught them or life has taught them and you start to shrink back and you shrink back. But it's that A level that you really end up being like a kid. So Joe comes in here and says, you know what, I'm going to buy a studio. And everybody's like, well, that doesn't make any sense. And it's like, you know, 10-year-old Joe is like,
oh, the yeah, more sense it makes, the less I want to do it.
Right. but I think it's really coming back to that place where we're reckless with our faith and decisions and that sort of stuff. Not reckless in the sense of stupid. That's not what I'm talking about. But just having that abandonment to just trust fully. And that's what allows people to do these big audacious things and to have global impact and to have companies that change the world. You have to be reckless like that. You have to, you know, Elon Musk it and say, you know, we're going to build a colony on Mars in 2050 and everybody looks at you like you're crazy. And now you're sending people into space and you're going to go to the moon. And like, you're doing so many things that everybody said was impossible because you had that childlike faith and you just said, it's going to happen. And you went and did it. And so there's two parts to it. You have to have that kind of reckless abandonment, but then you also have the execution to take that space and that land when it's presented to you.
And that practice we gave a long time ago where you have so much trust in what your ability is, right? So if I say go out and make $20 today and you would leave here absolutely knowing that you could pull that off, right? And then you get to a certain level where you don't have faith that that's something that's in your wheelhouse. So when you're practicing, when I'm practicing building businesses, I wasn't building businesses. I was building lemonade stand type businesses until I knew that I could do that without even challenging me.
Yeah. But it's interesting because people will look at you, right? And they'll say, oh, he's so lucky. you know, he had his beautiful house. He runs all these companies. He drives a Tesla. He's so lucky. Like, people would look at that and they project that onto you. And that's kind of the verbiage that you hear. You hear people look at, you know, an athlete that gets, you know, does really well and ends up getting paid or whatever. And, you know, people look at that and they use that word luck. Yeah. And I love this quote. I saw it earlier and I was like, I'm going to use it on the show today. It's from Seneca. And he said, luck is what happens when preparation meets opportunity. And I love that idea behind it. So to some extent, yes, Joe is lucky. His preparation met an opportunity. He worked his tail off and then the opportunity presented itself and he was prepared to take it. A lot of times there are opportunities that are presented to people and they're just not prepared to take it. And if they did take it, it would chew them up and spit them out because they've done no preparation. You know, when I played sports in high school, I can remember our coaches could only start meeting with us for a certain time for practice. And then before that time, coach was like, hey, I want you to be doing this so that you're prepared when I start meeting with you. And then we want to be prepared for when we start playing games. And then the games are to prepare us so that we can play in the playoffs. And everything's about the figure eight of preparation. Right. You're always preparing for the next thing.
So if you played a football game, right? And usually we reserve Hail Marys for the, you know, 2 seconds final remaining. Play of the game, yeah. What if a team decided that all they were going to do all game long was Hail Marys?
It'd be like my son's playing Madden.
There you go.
That's literally what they do.
How many of those would connect? A great deal more of them than the one with 2 seconds to go. If you threw 1,000 of them, maybe 10 of them actually land and you score 10 touchdowns. It might still be enough.
It's college football.
There you
go. No, I mean, you know, when you look at that, you're right. But it's the preparation. It's the 1 yard run in practice in the middle of August that prepares you for the Super Bowl. I just took.
Well, I used something absurd like the Hail Mary and turned it into something that if a coach could put themselves out there and stomach the criticisms from throwing all Hail Marys, that they could have a benefit that he might trust himself to win a game and have, you know, triple digit scores every time.
Sure, sure. No, yeah. You know, when we went, I took my boys last week. We did a Father Sunday. We went to the Hall of Fame. It was awesome. Just had a blast with it. But we went to the Super Bowl room. And while you're standing outside of the Super Bowl room, there's like this like 8 minute preview video that they show you while you're waiting in line. And it's all the preparation the teams do all summer long, showing the summer practices and guys puking on the sidelines and, you know, all of the stuff that they're doing to prep for the season. And then when you get in, they kind of, you know, each video is done a little differently. They show you some of the preseason, the games, the stuff they had to endure. And then finally, they give you the kind of highlight reel of the Super Bowl. It's very cool. The seats move and stuff. It's fun. But in that, you know, watching the preparation, I forget who it was, Bill Parcells or one of those famous coaches, you know, kept saying, you guys want to play in the Super Bowl or something along that line. And all the guys are like, well, yeah. And he goes, well, we win the Super Bowl in August. And that idea that, hey, if we want an opportunity to win the game, our preparation starts right now. Absolutely. And there's so many people that want the opportunities, but don't want to prepare. They want the success, but they don't want the early mornings, the late nights, the things that go into success.
And either one of those people who claim luck, like you experiencing luck or me, they can waterfall back through and find out how that luck came to be. And what they're going to find is it happened way before August. Yeah.
No, it's 100% true. You know, there may be a few plays that go your way or whatever, but it's all in the preparation that allowed you to be in that moment. I was just sharing this with somebody. So in seventh or eighth grade, something like that. I played like in town PAL basketball. And my dad coached, and all the other teams, like the dads and stuff, were like fun and cool. And they'd let them scrimmage the whole time and stuff. My dad made us run suicides with our hands over our heads. Mm. I'm 12, 13 years old. And everybody else is like having fun in the gym. And our guys are like, this sucks. You know, everybody's like, your dad's a jerk. And I'm like, I'm sorry. And we'd run these suicides and all that sort of stuff. Well, the whole season goes by. We end up with a 2 seed going into the playoffs. And we make it all the way to the championship game. And the team that we play, we end up going into triple overtime and we win. And afterwards, my dad, we're holding the trophies, everything like that. He leans over and he says, they were tired and you guys weren't because I made you run all those suicides with your hands over your head. Your hands were up on defense. It's why we had a couple plays bounce our way. And now I was 13. I was not thinking that at all.
Like, thanks, Dad.
But now, you know, fast forward, you know, 20 years of my life.
Right.
Longer than that. 20. Oh, wow. a lot of years of my life. Yeah. You know, you look at that and you go, yeah, the principle he was teaching me is right. Like, yeah, nobody wants to put the discipline in, the preparation in. Nobody wants to walk through plays. Nobody wants to move slow. There's another Bible verse, Joe.
I was slow.
We're on fire today. In one of the minor prophets, it says, you know, don't despise the day of small beginnings. And it's that idea that, like, hey, even in these small things, even in these small responsibility, if I do well with those, eventually much is around the corner. If I take my time and I do the things and I'm disciplined in the day to day, and I'm showing up and I'm expressing my faith and I'm looking out, I'm battling the fear, uncertainty, and doubt, that's going to sharpen me that when the opportunity comes, everybody's going to go, oh, he's so lucky. Well, no, I've just been preparing for 25 years and the opportunity came and my preparation met an opportunity, and you can call that luck. You know, we can follow that trail back, right. And ultimately you're going to find out it was a lot of hard work.
Let's correct one of the words that we also use a lot, where, you know, there's a Latin phrase that basically means great sacrifice equals great rewards, right? Mm-hmm. And in our society, a sacrifice means like a single act, like one sacrifice of the lamb on the altar, and then you get what you were asking for, right, whatever. Right. But a sacrifice in terms of what we're talking about here is when you choose in the morning, instead of staying in bed, you get up. Or you don't go out for that dinner, you stay at home. Or, you know, you do something over a regular schedule while you're training your subconscious to trust that you can stay in there and do hard things over long periods of time.
Yeah.
Those are your suicide runs right there.
Yep.
You got to wait for those payoffs. And sometimes they never get realized. But the general in you, you keep doing those things even if they don't.
Yeah. So I think for our audience, you know, no matter where they're finding themselves today, just show back up for the next practice, the next thing, because the opportunity is around the corner and you want to prepare yourself, because the fear, uncertainty, and doubt is going to come so that you can push through, and everyone will call you lucky because you prepared.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast.